Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Anthony Johnson, and this is the Anthony Johnson Show. So let's jump right into it. So we are all going through the process and dealing with the coronavirus, the pandemic, and you know we're all in this together. You know, we go through life where we use that term a lot when we are down and out. Rarely do you hear people say, you know, we're all in this together when, you know, you're being successful. But nonetheless, that we are all in this together because this is new for everybody. I mean, unless you are 101 and up, then you didn't live through this. And we're experiencing these things now. So this is really, even after, you know, the country has been shut down, and now we see that some of the states are actually starting to open back up slowly, some states faster than others. You know, we have still not gotten to the heart of it, that who dropped the ball? You know, I think we live in a society and we live in a time where people are quick to say, well, we shouldn't be worrying about who made these mistakes. We need to deal with it now. And that's been the problem, ladies and gentlemen. We don't learn from history. We don't say, okay, we can, it's like walking and chewing gum at the same time. It appears that many people can't do it. So they'll say things like, well, let's not worry about, you know, who messed up, who made this horrific mistake, because this is a horrible mistake. This is not a mistake where, you know, no one is seriously injured. Hundreds of thousands of Americans, and when it's all said and done, millions of Americans will have contracted the coronavirus. And to be brutally honest, most likely millions of people will die because of it. So you can't say, we can't worry about who made these mistakes. Let's just focus on dealing with the issue in front of us. Yes, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. You can deal with it right now and work on finding the solution, but you also have to go back to the history and say, who knew about this? Who dropped the ball? So when we finally do defeat this pandemic, and we will, we can say, okay, never again means never again. We're going to put things in place so this doesn't happen again. And if by chance that it does happen again, we will be prepared. And perhaps this time around, not one person will die from it because we'll have our hands around it and know how to address it. So one thing what we have seen in this country, and this is this evening's episode where I talk about how the coronavirus exposed the vulnerability of America's healthcare system. The coronavirus pandemic has revealed that the U.S. healthcare system is in bad shape. It is both overdeveloped and underdeveloped. It has created, the coronavirus pandemic has created a confusing pattern of excellent and profound failure. What I'm saying here is that we have made medical technological advances that will astound even Darwin if he was still alive. Yet, we are so far behind other countries, and in some instances, third world countries, with our medical technology that it's an absolute embarrassment. So a couple of weeks ago when I talked about, giving you an example, when I talked about the protocols that they have in place, wash your hands, practice social distancing, wear masks, gloves, things like that. That's the same playbook that was used in 1347 in Europe during the bubonic plague. That's the same playbook that they used more than 100 years ago during the Spanish flu epidemic. At the same time, it took 2 years to develop a vaccine during the Spanish flu over 100 years ago, and here we are in 2020 having this same conversation, that it's going to take about 2 years before we find a vaccine. Now, they can say they're moving fast and furious, great, wonderful, you should have been doing that anyway. You don't get a gold star for doing something that you're supposed to be doing. But who are we kidding? It's not going, and when I hear people say, oh, they said it's going to take 6 months. No, it's not going to take 6 months, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to take about 2 years. Okay, at the least, it'll take 15 to 18 months. But 2 years is basically it's the standard. So that's where that's a profound failure, because with all the medical advances that this nation has had from the medical, from the technological perspective, we're still using 20th century, hell, 12th century, 13th century medical technology, which is completely not just confusing every American in this country, but also leaving a great deal of despair and stress. At first glance, the U.S. healthcare system appears to just fail on the margins. However, the COVID-19 illuminates that these failures are vast and they continue to grow. The current design of the healthcare system is failing Americans, you and I. And the $4 trillion per year question is why? A coronavirus is so tiny that 1,000 of them could be stacked in the thickness of a sheet of paper. It is an invisible threat, and it is making vivid shortcomings of our healthcare system. The world is a playground for viruses like the novel coronavirus that causes COVID-19. So, the bigger the population grows, the more and more viruses are jubilant because they gain power, they gain traction, because people are going to spread them. I was talking to somebody recently about watching the movie The Matrix, and the character Mr. Smith, when he has Morpheus and he's trying to get the intel from him, he said, I've been trying to figure out, what to call you. You humans, he said, and I thought about it. You guys are a virus, because just like a virus, everywhere you go, you spread, you infect, you spread, you infect, you spread. So the bigger the population gets, which we have over 7 billion people, viruses thrive in that society, those type of societies. See, any pandemic, ladies and gentlemen, and the world has had a history of them, can cause devastation. But COVID-19 has a higher mortality in people with, diabetes and obesity and heart disease and among older adults. So all those years that our doctors have told us, we got to take care of ourselves healthy, got to lose some weight, check our hearts, our cholesterol, they wasn't telling us this because they saw the coronavirus coming. Well, not my doctor, but he was telling us that these are things that not just, if you have diabetes, diabetes affects every aspect of your body. If you have obesity, people say, I might be obese, but what does that have to do with my health? Everything. Everything. Heart disease. It plays a significant role in every fiber of your body. And now that this COVID-19 is here, those individuals who suffer from diabetes and obesity and heart disease and who are senior citizens who have ailments are prone to get it first. Its secondary impact on the economy also intensified the risk of death of despair by suicidal addiction. We have seen a rate of suicide in this country increase and addiction, alcohol, drugs, or other causes. For most people, chronic conditions come in twos and threes. They take decades to set in and reverberate across generations. The prevalence of chronic conditions in the U.S. population was already projected to grow substantially over the next decade. A burden disproportionately borne by the poor and working class, particularly devastating for people of color and intensifying with all ages. So the chronic conditions that many of us have was already growing, and within 10 years, it was going to be off the charts. COVID-19 merely pushes it, accelerates it, to a level that we have never, ever seen before. It may never live to see that, because it comes roughly once every generation, if that. So we must realize, ladies and gentlemen, that our crowded world of 7.8 billion people, a combination of altered human behaviors, our environmental changes, and inadequate global public health mechanisms now easily turn obscure animal viruses into existential human threats. So in other words, some of the human viruses that was basically non-concerning to we as humans is now have grown into something that we should be concerned about all the time. The coronavirus outbreak should be a wake-up call. It should be our wake-up call. It should be our quote-unquote political leaders in this country, our medical leaders, because one ignored with the less widespread outbreak of SARS in 2003 and the not-so-deadly flu pandemic of 2009 about infectious threats we face together and that exploit vulnerabilities associated with income inequality, health disparities, and our slowness to recognize threats. So we are slow to recognize threats, ladies and gentlemen. We don't not necessarily ignore the threats, not you and I, sadly. Very sadly, our political leaders, as well as many of our medical leaders, did just that. You and I may not ignore the threats, but they did. We tend to overreact to problems that are facing us right now, but underreact to a long-term threat that builds slowly. And this is what a virus does. It builds slowly. It doesn't happen overnight. It happens over time. And once it grows, that's it. That's it. I remember the day when the World Health Organization officially said that coronavirus was a pandemic. I said, whatever they were trying to do, it's over. Because now they're dealing with the elephant in the room. Now you got to deal with the elephant in the room. Because the elephant was in the room for a long time and you failed to do anything. Now that it's labeled a pandemic, it's too late. You literally now have to go from scratch. And now you're going to be constantly trying to catch up to this thing because it continues to grow. Take the current run on face masks. So we panic, but we don't prepare. We panic, but we don't prepare. The classic case of putting the cart before the horse. So you take the current run on face masks. They won't protect you from the neighbor's coronavirus, but a shortage of masks to protect healthcare professionals who need to treat sick people means we could all suffer. So it is May 17th. And there is still a great shortage of masks in this country, which is an absolute embarrassment to the world. And I know many of us may say, well, I could care less about what's going on in the world and what they think about us. And you're right. But it's an embarrassment nonetheless. And it's an embarrassment to every American that we live in a country where we're dealing with a pandemic and there's not enough masks to go around for our first responders. Come on, guys. Come on. You know, the Trump and the medical community failed. The Trump administration mistakes have been symptomatic of this larger problem. Officials eliminated White House-level positions aimed at preventing pandemics 2 years ago and sought to scale back work to deal with disease outbreaks elsewhere, from 49 countries originally to 10. The Trump administration bungled the rollout of diagnostic tests and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the Food and Drug Administration were too slow to adopt a suggestion made by former FDA Commissioner Scott Goliath, a loop in major academic medical centers so more tests can be run. Only now is testing capacity for coronavirus starting to ramp up, and not by much, I may add. Yeah, they're starting to test now, but they're still way behind. So, we're quick, and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It's easy to blame Donald Trump for this. He's an idiot, okay? He's an idiot. What did you expect? You expected him to be an Obama? You expected him to be a George W. Bush? You expected him to be a Bill Clinton on a pandemic and get on it? A virus that's wiping out, the planet? You expecting him to be on top of that? Of course not. Of course not. So, yes, it's easy to bully the imbecile. But what you have to do is you have to look at the individuals who are supposed to be the intelligent ones in the room and say, well, what were they doing? What were they doing? And the former FDA commissioner made that crystal clear that he gave suggestions that they should follow, that the FDA, the Center for Disease Control, should follow. And they felt, oh, well, no, we don't need to do that. It'll be okay. We got a hold on this. And if it comes to that, get this now, if we get a pandemic, then we'll deal with it. These are doctors. Clearly, like so many Americans, they didn't go to history class. They cut class. Because had they gone to class in medical school, their medical history class, which they talk about pandemics, they would have known that once a pandemic becomes what it says it is, then you're late. You're late. You're behind. Medical coverage or no medical coverage? That is the question in America. Even though Obama Affordable Care Act gave millions of Americans health care for the first time in many in a generation, it still didn't go far enough. And I understand what he was doing. He was setting the trend. He was laying the foundation. And that whoever would win the 2016 presidential campaign, they would continue. Even if they didn't want to do his and they wanted to call it something else, that it would follow suit. Okay, if I got X amount of millions of Americans, getting health care for the first time in their lives, then the next president will come along and make sure that another million plus will get it. And then keep it going till we get to a point at some point in time in this country where every American is covered. Well, that didn't happen. There's a great chance that the cases that have been missed with the coronavirus can be identified and controlled with measures like isolation and quarantine. Yet, even when they've done that, the question is, what do we do now that the coronavirus has come into widespread contact with our healthcare system? See, a virus. The virus infected our healthcare system. Our healthcare system was already outdated. It was already draconian. And then the virus came and really exposed it for what it was. Old, outdated, and draconian. To contain the virus, people will need to call healthcare providers as soon as they develop any flu-like symptoms. So we know this, right? We've had this conversation with our doctors. I'm sure you've watched TV time and time again, and they've said this. But will they? And have they done so at the cost of losing money? So there are people who may have a lot of the symptoms. But get this, ladies and gentlemen, they're not going to get it checked out. They're addressing it themselves. See, not only do 26 million Americans lack health insurance, nearly half of those with private insurance, another 60 million people have high deductible plans in which they can be on the hook for thousands of dollars. What am I saying? I'm saying simply stated, there are people who have this coronavirus, but they can't afford to go to a doctor. They can't afford it. So they're taking matters into their own hands. It may be better for patients with COVID-19 to stay home and use the telemedicine services to see the doctor, and that's what people are doing. But the telemedicine, though on the rise, is still hamstrung by state licensing rules and the fact that all insurance don't pay for it the same way. So you don't have insurance. How are you going to do the telemedicine? And even if you do have it, you're going to be on the hook for paying thousands and thousands of dollars. Now I understand you might be saying, well, Anthony, it has to be done. I agree. But for those 26 million people who don't have insurance, what do we say to them? They can't even get the service. When patients do arrive at a hospital or a doctor's office, which you can't even go to a hospital now unless you are sick, They face shortages of nurses and physicians, particularly in rural areas. So we're not even talking about the rural areas of this country. Here, right here in Philadelphia, the rural areas of Pennsylvania, where you can't get any physicians and nurses because they can't get to you. There are concerns about whether there's enough ventilators in the country to care for all the people who could get pneumonia in a worst-case scenario. So two things that this country we should have, and there should be no debate about, is ventilators and masks, and yet we're still scrambling around in this country to get those things. So the U.S. healthcare system, ladies and gentlemen, has a basic repeating motif: regional hospitals at its center and satellite clinics around it. It is led by doctors and trailed by informal or underpaid caregivers. The basic idea is that when you're sick, you'll come to the clinic or hospital if your issue is serious enough. Then you're sent home to figure out the rest of your life. The system's job is to maintain sufficient flow of manage surges. It's like a power plant that delivers a regular output and protects itself from blackouts. That's what our healthcare system looks like, ladies and gentlemen, a power plant. However, the power plant model of healthcare fails four types of people in this country: economically distressed people who can't afford to access it, people in rural communities who live far from it, people of color who have experienced institutional racism and do not trust it, and people with disabilities who are challenged at every turn if they seek access. This is what we're dealing with. This is what we face. This is what a large segment of the United States, millions and millions of the 325 millions of Americans, are going through these things. Today at U.S. hospitals and clinics are struggling. Today the hospitals and the clinics are struggling, ladies and gentlemen. Calls for quick fixes grow louder. For a highly infectious disease like COVID-19, it is untenable national strategy to not care for migrants, the homeless, and undocumented or marginalized people. That's the other population that's not getting the help. I'll say it again. Migrants, undocumented, that's undocumented folk that's been here, undocumented, the homeless, and the marginalized people. When people just before the coronavirus, they wouldn't even spit on the same sidewalk, now, or the same street that they walking on. Now they just walk across the street. Things like this are supposed to bring us together. A pandemic in 1918 actually brought people together. This right here is not bringing us together. There seems to be more division, not just among ourselves, but within our healthcare system. It is dividing the nation. A country with a national pandemic strategy that leaves anyone out is a threat to itself and other countries beyond its borders. Waiting until fewer people show up at hospitals is not a plan. Watching the cost of healthcare rise for people who do not overcome their circumstances is not a plan. Ladies and gentlemen, today the U.S. healthcare facilities are overwhelmed and seen as dangerous places to be. And Americans shuttered at home are looking for alternatives to waiting for their doctor in a waiting room. Some are simply avoiding healthcare altogether. Hence why when Donald Trump made that idiotic statement about disinfectants, this is why some of the hotline numbers to doctors were being called. People were literally calling and asking, if I drink Clorox, would that help against the coronavirus? This, in the 21st century, is terrible, woefully horrific. But if you go back and look at the history of when AIDS was here, had basically invaded America, there were AIDS patients who were resorting to taking disinfectants, like drinking a cap full of Clorox bleach, because bleach kills infections. But, yeah, along the way, it kills you too, because it's not meant for human consumption. We are living in a time where many people are frightened and confused, and they're hearing information from all parties of all walks of life that's not making sense. At some point in time, you simply throw up your hands, and that's what we cannot do. Rough estimates project that COVID-19's secondary toll, deaths due to non-COVID health issues like heart disease and socioeconomic conditions such as mental health impact, may be the same order of magnitude as the primary death toll from the disease. So in other words, ladies and gentlemen, people are not going to be dying, or people are not dying from having COVID, but they're dying from issues about COVID that's killing them because they can't get the services that they need. Heart disease, diabetes, obesity, mental health, no economics to buy basic things that they need for their homes, food, and toiletries, and things of that magnitude. So COVID-19 is killing people in two ways, directly and indirectly. We have to figure this thing out. If we want to get this thing moving and moving out of our lives, so it doesn't become the new normal, we have to start doing better. And we can start by holding the political leaders in this country, the so-called political leaders, and the medical community, the medical leaders. We have to start holding them accountable. Because if we don't, this will turn from 2 years to find a vaccine to 20 years. I close out tonight's show with we can be the outcome. Can we stop acting foolishly over the coronavirus? Can we just stop relying on misinformation and blatant lies about this pandemic? Can we just stop? Just stop. Look, we can get through this pandemic. And you know why? Because some of our grandparents and their parents faced the Spanish flu, the first pandemic America faced in 1918. We have to start thinking intelligently and compassionately to maneuver through the coronavirus. But the first thing we have to do is calm down and think. Calm down and think. Ladies and gentlemen, we can be the captain to shape a better future in America, or be the author of our destruction. Good night.